So, basically, I'm going to speak about the parable of the lost sheep, see what I can get out of that. If I stick to it, we're one. If I don't, we go off over there, it's cool. If you've heard me speak for Anet Live, you know I'll go off on one. So this talk could be 5 minutes, could be as long as Andrew's. And oh, that got you laughing. That one good. So I was trying to plan this talk. And I was thinking, I've got to think of something, you know, really cool and really deep and meaningful, you know, because it's a parable, isn't it, really? You know? You've heard it all before, and, you know, I thought I'd left it behind, you know, when I graduated from junior church. With honours, by the way. Genius. They gave me a book. And, yeah, I haven't read it yet. But, you know, I'm not that complex. I'm quite a simple person. I like simple things. Bright colours. That's it. So we're gonna read this. So have you got Bibles? Put them in the air for me. Put them in the air. No, up in the air. I want to smell your armpits. Cool. That's more than we get for Anet Live. Would someone like to read it for me? To shout it out. Just put your hand up. Yeah. I'm not gonna read it. No one? I'm gonna pick you. I want someone with a deep masculine voice. Any of the women wanna? No? Jimmy. Yeah. This is my friend Jimmy. He's got the best hair ever. He's just like an advert for L'Oreal. It's genius. Go on, read it out, Jimbo. Cheers, pal. Alright, so the first thing that we see about this story is that there's both sinners and Pharisees stood listening to Jesus. There's kind of two opposites. And it's kind of weird that tax collectors aren't sinners. They're kind of a different class of their own. But we'll just leave that for now, you know. And so there's two people. There's the lost and the righteous. And there's a kind of a clash. And the Pharisees don't really like this. They don't like that sinners are listening to Jesus. They don't think they have the right to be stood in the same place as them, really. But this just proves that this story that Jesus told is for everyone. It's for everyone who's lost or a sinner or a Pharisee or, you know, whatever. So this is for all of you guys. So, you know, if you fall asleep, I will kick you. Not very hard. But I've got a spike in my foot. Anyway, so it's a Pharisee's attitude and the kind of response to what the sinners are doing that and their reaction to Jesus' attitude and response that kind of triggered the telling of this story, but in my talk, I want to focus on the beginning of the passage before the story because I think that's more important, but you know what I'm saying. And I want it to be as a challenge to us as individuals and us as a church. It kind of links into what we've been the past half an hour has been about you know, reaching out and moving as a church into the city. Okay, so. I assume that, you know, everyone's Christian here, either that or, you know, if you're not, welcome, hi, and I love you. And so everyone's a Christian here, and you've all been saved, so you've kind of got this kind of Pharisee thing about you. I'm not calling you Pharisees, but you've got this kind of, you know, you're saved, you're there, you're righteous, you've got the right to listen to Jesus, and sometimes that's our reaction. Our reaction is the Pharisee reaction. It's the kind of, you know, those are sinners we don't want to associate. And I just want to, you know, what kind of reaction would we have if we were stood in a crowd next to a dirty, a scratty kind of, what, you know, matted kind of drug addict? You know, the ones that I met in Madrid and that, those kind of people, would you want to stand next to them because they're just dirty and they're just horrible? And, you know, what reaction would you have if, you know, Jesus is like the holiest guy ever, you know, was there and talking and preaching and this kind of little lowlife stood next to you? Would you have the same reaction as the Pharisee? And would that mean that Jesus would need to tell the story to you? Would he have to explain to you why he's gathered everyone here and why everyone's listening and why everyone has the right to listen? Which kind of implies that we kind of subconsciously kind of limit salvation onto people. We kind of limit who gets saved and who doesn't, you know, based on our own prejudice. And, you know, if someone came in the door, not now because they'd be rude walking in halfway through my talk, but if they came in at the start and they were this kind of, you know, down and out, or maybe just a renowned thief or whatever, or someone you'd tangled with in the past? Would you want them to sit next to you? Would you want them to become saved that night? Because, you know, that the point when people get saved is the defining moment in their life. It's important to them, and it should be important to us. And so would you want that? Would you be there praying for them, or would you just, you know, think, we don't want you in this church? We're a nice middle-class suburban church. We're kind of smooth and elegant, you know. Look at you. You're all pretty. I like what I see. I like it. It's not Gucci, but it'll do. Sorry. I must point out this isn't going to be the most linear talk ever, but we'll go with it. But, you know, so there's loads of lost people out there. There's roaming. I just saw two people walk past. They're lost people. It's lost sheep. And you know, the lost people, who are they? They're drug addicts. They're murderers. They're liars. They're adulterers. They're prostitutes. They're your next-door neighbour. You know, the guy behind you in the checkout queue. The homeless man begging for food, or the woman opposite you on the bus, or, you know, the man in the toilet cubicle next to yours. Which, by the way, if you do this, I recommend this. It's great, right? If you do a bit of toilet evangelism, that's what I've done, right? What you do is you go. You like this. So you go in beforehand, and you remove all the toilet paper in the cubicle next to yours, and then you sit in your cubicle and just wait, okay, with a Sharpie. And when they kind of, you know, knock on and ask for some, you just write John 3:16 down on the toilet paper and slip it through. Reaction's awesome. There are other games you can play in the toilet, but I won't tell you now. Those are for private later. If you do want to know, come and talk to me later. Okay, so yeah, so there's everyone, there's world leaders, you know, ex-girlfriends. Thought I'd throw that one in there. You know, we were all lost sheep, and there's still loads of lost sheep out there. And the point is that they all, you know, joking aside, which is a lot of joking for me, but the point is that they all need salvation. You know, whether they admit it or not, they're desperate for God, and they're desperate for his love and his salvation, and he's desperate for them. In fact, in the parable, it kind of shows you how desperate he is. He'd kind of go over thorns and mountains and just stumble in the dark and looking for the sheep, and then when he'd get it, he'd carry it and pick it up on, which I'm assuming sheep are pretty heavy, I don't know. But I assume they're pretty heavy, and he'd go and carry him, and he'd carry that sheep back, and that's desperate. We all seem to think that, you know, we're the only people who are searching for God. We seem to think that we're desperate, and he's just sitting there waiting for us. But he's desperate for us, man. He's really, really desperate to go and see you saved and see your friends saved. And when you guys got saved, man, it was a party. It was a crazy party. It was awesome. I was there. Oh dear. So he will go as far as he can, which is pretty far, and to see these people saved. And, you know, we should do the same. You know, what I've told our guys down at Friday Night Live a couple of months ago, I was talking something similar to this. I said, you know, we're all donkeys, essentially, and all our events, like these two services on a Sunday, or, you know, like Revive or the Men's Breakfast or the Saturday Night Outreach events, they're all donkeys, essentially. They're just stuff to carry Jesus to the world, you know. Like the donkey that carried Jesus into Jerusalem, we're just like donkeys. We're carrying Jesus to the world. We've got to carry him to the people who aren't going to, you know, move and get in here. Because it's going to be very rarely that someone just stumbles into church on the offhand, you know. It will happen, but it'll be very rarely. And, you know, we can't just sit in our comfortable chairs just, you know, waiting for this guy or this girl to just walk through and go, I need help. You know, we've got to get out there, you know. And we've got to find them, because there are the slums, there are the rubbish tips out there, and the homeless people out there. And there's also the people who won't say that they need God. You know, you're the guy in your office, he's desperate for God, but, you know, he just won't say it. And he doesn't know it, but he is desperate for God. And you've got to, you know, tomorrow morning, you just go and talk to him. And it might be someone you don't like. It might be the sinner and you're the Pharisee, but you've got to go and talk to them, and you've got to believe that this is for everyone. This salvation is for everyone. You know, there was 99 sheep. There was 99, pretty good out of 100. You know, there's 99 out of 100. You could have just cut your losses and go, well, it's fine, isn't it? It's just move on. Just leave that one, you know. Feed the wolves, it'll be fine. But, you know, Jesus said, no, that one is important to me. That one, I want to save that one, because that means more to me than these 99 that haven't strayed. And so just remember that, you know, each person has unbelievable significance. If we overlook that when we're walking past people in our daily lives and there's something wrong with us, something we need to get back to God, we need to get back to reading our Bible and doing our quiet times because there's something wrong with us, something we've lost in us that, you know, that kind of heart's cry has gone from us. So, yeah, I realised I've just run out of notes and I kind of stopped typing halfway through. I think I got distracted. Don't know what by. But, yeah, I mean, guys, I mean, I haven't been all too linear today. That's a first. And but like I really want to say that you guys, you know, you've got to stop being this kind of church that is just static. We may be in the suburbs and we may be like on the edge of a town, but we can still get in there. We can still just meet people and invite them to church and pray for them, you know, and just whatever. So guys, just live out the way, you know, be disciples and make disciples. That is a great little phrase. I think we should use that more often. So I'm going to hand over to Dave now. From Dave to Dave. But, you know, don't.
Hi, guys. Everyone enjoying Ford's version of the Dave Channel? All right. Tonight I'm going to be reading from Luke 15, 11 to 24, which is the parable of the lost son. So Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The young one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided it between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, and he left for a different country, where he squandered all of his wealth on riotous living. After he had spent everything that he had, a famine came upon the country, and he found himself being in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed the pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one would give him any. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's servants have food to spare? And here I am, starving. I will set out to go back to my father, and I'll say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son, but make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and he went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this my son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is now found.' And so they began to celebrate." So let's put this story in a bit more of a modern context, shall we? Imagine that there's this boy. He lives up in the Dales with his family, and they're well-respected pillars of the community. One day, this boy asks his father for his inheritance. He says, "Dad, I just want you out of the way. In fairness, I want you dead, Dad, so that I can have my inheritance." The father, saddened by his son, goes to the bank and gives him all the money, his heart heavy and tears running down his face. And as soon as the boy's got the money in his hand, he gets in the first cab, goes to the airport, and goes straight off to Las Vegas. And he gambles it all away, spends it all on stuff that should remain unsaid. But eventually he wakes up one morning, looks in his wallet, there's nothing there, no money. He goes to the bank and checks his bank account. The balance is zero. He's got nothing left. Everything has been spent. After days and days of doing the only thing left to him, begging on the streets and scrounging, he decides to return home and face his father. But entering into his hometown, his father sees him and doesn't walk, doesn't drive, doesn't just wait there for him to come to him, but he runs to his side, holds his son and welcomes him home. There are really two messages in this parable. As Dave was saying before, that Jesus wasn't just speaking to the sinners, but he was also speaking to the Pharisees. So the first message is Jesus saying that everyone has a hope. No matter how far you have strayed from God, you can still be saved. No sin is unforgivable, and a person can always find the path back to God. But there is another message as well, one that is often overlooked when people read this passage. And it's a far more challenging message, I feel. And I suppose the best way really to explain it is not to call it the parable of the rebellious son, but more the parable of the rebellious father. Because when Jesus was telling this story, it would have been considered incredibly radical and unheard of for the people of the time. When the son requested his inheritance from his father, he should have been exiled from the community. Such was the practice at the time that the son was saying, "Dad, I want you dead." And this would have made that the father would have had to cast him out and said, "Son, you are now dead to me." And then he leaves the country. So he leaves his family, he leaves his way of life, he leaves his people behind. He abandons every tradition and everything that he has ever been brought up with. And then the final nail in the coffin is that after he spent all of his money on this dirty way of living, that he goes and he works with the pigs. And to the Jews that were listening to this, pigs were, of course, an incredibly unclean animal. So in the Pharisees' minds, there was no way back for this guy. Yes, the lost sheep, against all odds, went out and they found him. But for this guy, the Pharisees would have thought, there's no way back for this guy. There's no way he can be forgiven. So what the father in the story did would have shocked the Pharisees and the people watching to the core. And I believe that this gives us as a church a challenge. That how far are we willing to go to upset the status quo and really be radical and upset society in order to see God's kingdom grow and become bigger and more powerful? How far are we going to upset people to get that one more person into God's kingdom? I'd just like to close in a quick prayer. Jesus, I thank you for tonight. I thank you, Lord, that you've just been here tonight, moving in this place. I pray that what I and Dave have said tonight would really impact people's lives, that it would make a difference, that it would make a change. That, Lord, people will be willing to change things, to just live differently and make your world, your kingdom, the most important thing, to just make it the focus of their being. Amen. I'd just like to hand back to Dave.